Hey guys, it's Elena.
And it's Candace.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime.
You should have seen her hand motions as she explained what right. You're listening to.
It's the rhythm. Gotta get the Cousins on Crime. So, you had eventful. Yeah.
It's
in two ways. Yeah.
It's hard.
English is hard.
Well, it's hard on a Monday night.
Yeah. So, you had an eventful weekend.
I did. Just got back last night from a girls' trip. Oh my God, uncut chops. Yes, my mother, happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday. Yeah, she turned 25, if you can believe it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did she act like she was 25?
Yes. We passed, I can't remember what it was called, but it's called something daiquiris, and she goes, oh, I might need to... go check that. You guys have to understand, I grew up, my mother was very conservative, but she's a lot loose over the years, so. Love to see it. So, it was fun. Branson, Missouri.
Yeah, I've heard that there is a lot to do there.
There is a lot to do.
I went years ago, and I think there's a lot more to do there than back then.
Yes. We were going to do this mountain coaster, but that got rained out.
Aww.
Yeah, that sucked. And then we had tickets for Putt-Putt. It wasn't Putt-Putt. It was like this really cool Hollywood-themed mini golf place. That got rained out.
Oh, no.
And it was cold the whole time, but we did some fun stuff. The food. Oh.
Uh-oh. It wasn't Texas food.
Missouri, I gotta ask you, what's going on? I don't know if it was because we were in a touristy location.
Okay.
But the food was...
Oh, man.
That sucked. But, listen, we didn't starve.
Okay.
We got to eat food.
You still ate.
We still ate. Okay. You know? And we went to Guy Fieri's, that was pretty good.
Oh.
Yeah. That was good. So, it was just, touristy places. It's like, I don't know, they're busy, they're overstaffed, or understaffed, overworked, so.
Gotcha.
Could be all of the above, but anyways.
Well. I'm glad you went. You spent time with your mama and your sister.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I wish I could have joined y'all.
I know. What did you have again?
I had a women's conference at my church that
Did you not ask them to reschedule on behalf of...
You know, I did. I did, but they were like, Elena, like, it's not about you.
It's about the Lord Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I was doing the Lord's work.
And he was here first. Okay. Well, did you have a nice weekend?
Yes, it was really good. We had guest speakers at the church and just praise and worship. And, you know, I just love that element. Just loving the Lord.
Yeah, that's your vibe, girl.
It is. It is.
Vibing on Jesus.
That's right.
Well, I am excited to hear your case. What you got?
Well, okay. So, it might be a little long, so we'll just jump into it.
Let's get into it.
Okay, and now, most true crime enthusiasts have probably heard this one.
Okay.
You know, we like to do random ones that people have never heard, but this caught me, also because it was in the 1800s, and...
Oh my gosh, my case next week is old. It's not 1800s, but it's early... 1900s.
You know, I feel like I should have lived back then, and I think that's why I love these.
Times.
Yeah, well, I mean, they say simpler times, but I think it was hard work.
Oh, yeah.
But It's worth it. Worth the work. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it was 1871 in Labette County, Kansas. The neighboring towns were Oswego. That was so country. Oswego. Wow. Oswego, Independence, and Cherryville. Okay, imagine with open blue sky.
I'm just trying to do imagination music.
Thank you. Grass as far as you can see.
Okay, I see it.
Trees here and there. Okay. You know, it's Kansas.
Yes.
Crops hither and thither.
Are you speaking in old timey?
I am.
Because you're okay.
Yeah. And there was a small dirt road.
All right.
So following the American Civil War, the United States government moved the Osage Indian tribe from Labette County to a new Indian territory located in what would now be Oklahoma.
Uh-huh, because that's what we did.
That's what, yeah.
Sorry about that, guys.
And this was actually, I think, the third or fourth time that this Osage tribe was transferred somewhere else.
My apologies on behalf of my people.
Mm. So...
Well, we're sixth Indian, so...
We do.
We're caught in the middle of this scandal.
Maybe not Osage, but...
Yeah, not Osage, but Cherokee. But still, we can sympathize.
That's right. So the now vacant land in Kansas was then made available for homesteaders. Back in that time, you could simply claim land by what some call squatting.
So, squatters' rights?
Exactly. Where this has come from? Yeah. So basically, what that really meant was, you told the government what land you wanted, and I think you could get up to 160 acres. you could have it as long as you built a home and like
squatted on it,
tended the land,
yeah,
farmed and all that. So in 1871 was when some things started happening in the area that made townspeople concerned and a little suspicious. We'll start by, okay, so that was 1871, but a couple years before that, 1869, a man named Joe Sowers was found with a crushed skull.
Ooh.
And a cut throat.
Oh, slit throat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it gets me every time.
Yeah. So that was a little before, a couple years before the majority of the next events happened. So jumping back to 1871... A man named Mr. Jones went missing. His body was found in Drum Creek with a crushed skull and a slit throat.
Mm.
The only clue was a wagon track through the snow, which led down to the creek near where the body was found. So it was noted that the tracks were zigzagged, meaning that it was a certain type of wheel on the wagon.
I was about to ask you if it could indicate anything back then, like we have tire treads, all kinds, make models.
Yeah.
And so that's exactly really funny.
So I think it meant that the wagon wheels were wider than most, and so there was a specific indication. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they could, if they could pinpoint the wagon, they might be able to find the killer. The owner of Drum Creek in the area where the body was found was suspected of the murder, but nothing was really ever done about it. Maybe because the wagon wheels didn't match his, I don't know. But February of 1872, two unidentified men were found on the prairie, killed the same way with their crushed skulls and slit throats. Due to the history of the Osage Indian Territory, they speculated that these murders were done by the Osage Indians out of retaliation for moving on their land.
Well, I was going to say the same thing, but then wouldn't there be scalping?
Right. That was a big thing from mm-hmm. Native Americans.
Right.
Right. Jumping to December of 1872, Ben Brown from Howard County, Kansas, went missing without a trace.
Yay, yay.
He was from Cedarville and had been trading horses in the neighborhood with a man named Mr. Johnson. Also in December, W.F. McCrotty company with Company D, 123rd Infantry, however you say it. I don't know. He went missing. He lived in Cedarville and was en route on a wagon with a team of horses to Independence to contest some land. He wanted to squat.
Yeah.
Henry McKenzie from Hamilton County, Indiana, went missing. He was en route with a matched team of horses to Independence for the purposes of relocating there. Also in December, Johnny Boyle from Howard County, Kansas. He planned a trip to purchase some land and he never returned. It was also never recorded that he had even bought the land that he went there for.
Hmm.
John Greary and Red Smith and Abigail Roberts. I could not find anything about either any of them, but they too went missing. And then George Newton Loncourt. Newspapers reported his name was either Loncourt or Launcher. You know, back in those days, it was common for people to change their last names.
Mm-hmm.
especially if they immigrated from another country. So anyway, George and his 18-month-old daughter, Marianne, went missing.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. George and his wife, Mary Jane, had a son named Robert that had died from pneumonia in May of 1871. Then, several months later, shortly after giving birth to Marianne, Mary Jane died at the age of 21. So it was said that George could not bear the responsibility of raising his daughter on his own, so he purchased a team of horses from his neighbor, Dr. William Henry York, and packed up and took Marianne to relocate back to his parents' home in Iowa. So in May 1873, Dr. William York later went looking for George Loncourt. The both of them were in the Civil War. I don't know if they were fought together or what, but Dr. York found out that George and Marianne Loncourt never made it to their destination.
Oh my gosh.
He saw George's wagon and belongings abandoned.
Yikes.
So he sees that the wagon is abandoned, so he went looking for them. He reached Fort Scott and on March 9th began the journey back home to Independence. He told his brother that he would stop and rest at the Bender Inn, as he had done a few times in the past before, but he never arrived home.
Oh no. Do we know if he made it to the inn?
Well, okay. So the townspeople really relied on Dr. York, and he just never came back. So they were worried.
Yeah.
His brother, Dr. York's brother, he did go look for him. So,
okay.
Dr. York had two brothers, Colonel Ed York, living in Fort Scott, and Kansas Senator Alexander York, who wow. lived in Independence. So
this family made something of themselves.
Yes. And so they were not someone who you wanted to mess with.
Right.
And so this prominent family, they're like, I want my brother back. Where's he at? So they put together a team to go find him. Both knew of his travel plans, and when he failed to return home, they hadn't heard from him. It wasn't normal. They set out to look for him. Colonel York is the one that set up the search party. You know, power in numbers.
Yeah.
They questioned every traveler along the trail and visited all of the homes in the area. Remember that dirt road I mentioned at the beginning?
Yes, I do.
It was the Great Osage Trail.
Oh.
Which was then the only open road for traveling further west.
Oh, okay.
So all of these travelers are traveling this way.
Yeah.
On March 28th, 1873, Colonel York arrived at the Bender Inn with Mr. Johnson. The Bender Inn was built on the, right off the Osage Trail between Fort Scott and Independence. It was a 16 by 24 feet cabin. The inn was a dingy place.
Motel 6?
Yeah. I don't know if they left the lights on or not. But
did they have lights? We'll leave the candle light on for
you. Yeah, there you go. Candle in the window. But it seemed to be a good place for travelers to stop and rest or get refreshments, as they also had a general store inside. I say general store, they had like just necessities like oats, things to kind of fill you up and send you on your way.
Yeah.
They explained to the Benders that his brother had gone missing and asked if they had seen him. The Benders admitted that Dr. York had stayed with them and suggested that maybe he had run into trouble with the Native Americans after he left there. Colonel York agreed that, I mean, it was possible. He stayed for dinner and then he traveled on. The family that ran the inn, let me just tell you a little bit about them.
All right.
It was John Bender Sr., who they called Pa. He was about 60.
They called him Pa.
Some reports say that his name was William Bender, but we're going to say John Sr. His wife, Elvira, who they called Ma. Real original. The reports I read said that she was 42. Their son, John Jr., was 25, and daughter, Kate, was 23. So something very interesting that most people believed that John and Kate were brother and sister. However, the two were known to be a little intimate with each other.
Okay.
Mm.
Ew.
Uh-huh. And there are reports that the two of them did call each other husband and wife. So there's mixed reports. Brother, sister, husband, wife.
That's a big difference.
So the thing about it is that the townspeople really didn't get to know the Bender family. They knew that every time someone traveled in the direction of their inn, they went missing. The area was already widely known for horse thieves and villains. So they really tried to stay away from that area.
Yeah.
Like, don't go by that creepy house.
I know, and I was also thinking, like, not pirates, but, you know, when people would travel in those days, there were bandits, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
So that's where my mind was going.
Gotcha. So John Bender Sr. and John Bender Jr. immigrated to Kansas from Germany.
Oh.
Yeah, and they were registered to have 160 acres of land, so they got all they can get.
Yeah.
So after building a cabin, a barn with a corral, and a well, in the fall of 1871, Elvira and Kate arrived to live with them. So,
okay, so they're also from Germany.
That will come to light later.
Okay.
The cabin was divided into two rooms with a canvas wagon cover. So just think, you've got this 16 by, what did I say, 24 feet. And in the middle is this wagon cover, canvas material, just dividing the room.
This is like, I don't know, two teenagers who share a room and they draw a line down the middle.
Yeah. And they're like, we're going to share this place with travelers. And they can sleep right here.
Okay. That's great. Sounds good.
So the Benders used the smaller room at the back of the cabin as their living quarters. The front was converted into the general store and inn. Ma and Kate also planted a 2-acre vegetable garden and apple tree orchard.
How very lovely.
Yeah. So, you know, they
like
were fed.
Breakfast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Pa Bender, he was from Germany and spoke very little English. When he did speak, it was so gruff and rough that it was usually unintelligible. And he was described as ill-tempered.
Oh.
Just a burly man, an angry man.
Okay.
Very inviting, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, can I make a reservation? Are they still taking appointments?
No? I would say no.
Okay.
But to top it off, Ma Bender, who also spoke very little English, was so unfriendly.
Oh, great. What a pair.
Yeah, they called her She-Devil.
Okay.
Yeah, one article from back in that day said she was a dirty old Dutch crone.
Well, Elvira doesn't exactly, you know, I mean, I guess that's very fitting, right?
Mm. So John Bender Jr., he was said to be handsome with auburn hair and a mustache. He spoke English fluently with a German accent. He was considered a half-wit.
Okay. It's getting better.
Yeah. So, when interacting with other people, he would just laugh at nothing.
Right. Mm. Okay.
Like, nothing was said to be funny. He just would laugh. And an article said, young Bender, seen when excited, recalled the grave-robbing hyena at once to mind.
Hey, to be fair, sometimes I do that. Sometimes someone's talking and I'm like, I remember something funny and I just start laughing. So
you might be a half-wit.
I am a half-wit.
I don't think you're a half-wit. Okay, so Kate Bender, she seemed to be educated and was attractive, and she spoke good English with a very little German accent. She advertised herself as a healer and a psychic.
All right.
She distributed flyers and advertised her supernatural powers, her ability to cure illnesses.
Okay.
She conducted seances and also gave lectures on spiritualism. And Kate even claimed to be friends with Napoleon Bonaparte.
I thought you were going to say dynamite.
Yeah, he was the French emperor who actually died 30 years before she was even born.
Okay, but she can go to the spirit realm and be friends with him if she wants.
I guess.
Yeah.
So, Ma and Pa kept to themselves. Kate and John Jr. would attend Sunday school in Harmony Grove, close by. So, mm-hmm. Sunday school at church and then seance by night.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So now you know a little bit about these people. Let's get back into the stuff. So on April 3rd, just a few days after Colonel York had gone to the Bender Inn and had dinner with them and questioned them, he was informed that a woman had fled from the inn after Ma had threatened her with a knife and a pistol.
Ooh. That's mean.
Yeah. So she ran out. She went into town, was like, guys, y'all gotta go over there. So
I'll be crazy.
She a devil.
Yeah.
Okay. So Colonel York went back to the inn with armed men. Ma allegedly could not understand English. So okay. Kate and John Jr. communicated for her, denying the claim. Mm-hmm. When York repeated the claim, Ma became enraged, and she said the woman was a witch, and she cursed her coffee, and she ordered the men to leave her house. In her rage, she spoke clear English.
Whoa.
Yeah. Interesting. How could that be?
I was about to say, maybe she's frustrated. Like, she's frustrated with the language barrier, and that's why she resorted to violence, which is what my
possibly
toddlers do.
Okay.
So, like, when they can't communicate something,
right,
they start hitting, biting, you know, they're getting better. But, yes, so I just figured maybe, but now
her true colors.
She's fluent?
She can speak English all of a sudden.
Okay.
So, before York left, Kate asked him to return alone the following Friday night.
Okay.
And she could use her spiritual gifts to help him locate his brother.
Okay.
The men with York were convinced that the Benders and the neighboring family, the Roaches, were guilty and wanted to hang them all.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
this was Texas or Kansas?
Kansas.
String them up.
Mm-hmm. So, the Roach family seemed to be involved because they were friends with the Benders. Maybe guilty by association. Yeah. Be careful who you hang out with.
Exactly.
Colonel York would not allow an arrest just yet because he wanted to have evidence. So around the same time, the community held a towns meeting at the Harmony Grove Schoolhouse. The meeting was attended by 75 locals, including Colonel York. Both Paul and John Jr. were there as well. After discussing the concerns of all the disappearances, including Dr. William York, it was agreed that a search warrant would be obtained to search every homestead.
Oh my gosh.
Between Big Hill Creek and Drum Creek. Now, several men in the meeting were like, come check my house now. Like, yeah, I've got nothing to hide.
Cross me right off the list.
Yeah. Come and check. Well, while those men were ready and willing, Paul and John Jr. sat there quiet, not saying a word.
I bet.
3 days later, neighbor Billy Toll was driving cattle past the Bender property. He noticed that the inn was abandoned.
Oh.
It was apparent that the cows and pigs had been out of food and water for too long.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Rude.
Billy reported what he saw to the township trustee, but due to bad weather, it was several days before they went to investigate. Volunteers showed up to search the property with Colonel York, and they found the cabin empty. No food, no clothing, no personal possessions.
Was the wagon sheet there?
They did not mention that. They did not mention that.
Was it still flapping in the breeze?
They just said that upon entering further into the home, they smelled a bad odor. It was traced to a trap door underneath a bed that was nailed shut.
Oh.
So okay. After opening the trap, they found an empty room beneath the house. 6 feet deep, 7 feet square at the top, and 3 feet square at the bottom. It was found to have clotted blood on the floor.
Gross.
Yeah. The stone slab floor was broken up with sledgehammers, but no bodies were found. The men were able to lift the cabin and moved it over so that they could dig deeper up under there.
They moved the whole cabin?
Yeah, because it was like on stilts or... Yeah, back in those days. Yeah, something. I don't know. It was, they like cranked it up.
It was a she-shed.
So yeah, they moved it over, started digging underneath, and no bodies were found there either. They then began to dig around the ground, around the cabin, using the brains that God gave them. They thought, maybe we should check this disturbed soil in the vegetable garden. Mm-hmm. So, this is where the first body was found.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. That first body belonged to Dr. William York.
Oh, no.
Colonel York finally found his brother.
He found him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
He was buried face down with his feet barely below the surface. They kept searching until midnight as they continued to find body after body.
Oh my gosh.
The next morning, more digging, more bodies.
Can you imagine just digging and being like, guys, I gotta get some sleep.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what, how many bodies now? 10? Let's resume this in the morning.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Unthinkable.
Yeah. They could not be exact on the body count at this point because there was a large number of body parts not connected.
Decomposition. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Yes.
They knew that there were 12 known bodies, but with all the other body parts, they estimated that it was a total of 21 people.
Oh my gosh.
So all but one had their heads beaten with this, with a hammer. And their throats cut. The body of a young girl was found with no injuries to cause murder, so it was speculated that she had been strangled and buried alive.
So, was that the little girl?
Yeah, Marion Longcore. A Kansas newspaper reported that after finding the bodies, crowds of onlookers showed up to see what was going on and I guess make sense of what they were hearing in the news. Word of the murders spread quickly and more than 3,000 people, including reporters from New York and Chicago, wow, came to see.
Yeah. This is like, whoa.
I know, but the fascination with true crime back then and...
Even back then.
Yeah.
In the vegetable garden? What? I can see the headlines writing themselves now.
Oh, yeah. So a Bible reported as Lutheran or Catholic, it was different reports, but it was found in the house with notes inside written in German. So a couple of them did speak German, apparently, which was later translated. The text read, Johanna Bender, born July 30th, 1848. And John Gebhardt came to America on July 1st, 18-something or another. It was ineligible. They couldn't read it. Several weeks later, Addison Roach and his son-in-law, William Buxton, were arrested as accessories.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So the Roaches were Roaches.
Apparently. And I'll touch a little bit on that in a minute. But so what's the motive? Like, why?
Yeah, why? Tell me why.
Was it that this family just had the lust to kill? Was it to take everything these men had for themselves? It was obvious that they lured people to their home. Signs saying grocery and inn. And,
right.
And then Kate's advertisements for her seances.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were the men that came up missing. They did have money on them. Like Ben Brown had... like $2,600 on him back in that day, and today that would be like $63,000.
Wow, geez.
McCrotty had $38, which was today in today's money $928, but he also had a wagon with horses.
Did they find any of these people's property?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, there were reports that these things were sold. Okay. Horses were
that
sold.
Makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's see, Mackenzie had $36 on him. Johnny Boyle had $850. Wow. Or no, he had a saddle on his pacing horse. It was an expensive horse. He had an expensive saddle on him. And the saddle and Mr. Boyle's body was found in the well, the Bender's well.
The saddle?
The saddle was in there with him. So... they must have not understood that this
that it
saddle,
was expensive. Yeah, dumb idiots, halfwits, if you
yeah.
will.
Yeah. So, just that goes along with the motive of let's take everything that they have. A couple of people who survived attacks from the Benders gave their account of what happened in that place. Due to those stories, it was speculated that it was, that if a guest appeared to be wealthy, the Benders would give them a seat of honor at their table.
Okay. That's nice.
Yeah. Till it wasn't. That seat was, it would be positioned, or they would position their guest with his back to the canvas wall. Also, the seat was over the top of the trap door.
Oh, is this like a Sweeney Todd type of trap door?
Sounds like it. So Kate would distract the guest, you know, giving her charm.
Mm-hmm.
And while Paul and John Jr. would come from behind the curtain and strike the guest on the right side of the head with a hammer, the victim's throat was then cut by one of the women to make sure that they weren't still alive. The body would then be dropped through the trap door. Once they bled out, they would go down there, go into the cellar, strip them of everything, and bury them.
Wow.
Yeah. So more than a dozen bullet holes were found in the roof and the sides of the room. This made them think that some of the victims had attempted to fight back after being hit with a hammer.
Yeah.
The Benders were nowhere to be found. However, some men were arrested. All had been... involved in disposing of the stolen goods, and one man was implicated for forging a letter from one of the victims informing the man's wife that he had arrived safely to his destination in Illinois.
Oh.
Dr. York's other brother, Senator Alexander York, offered a $1,000 reward for the Benders family's arrest. On May 17th, Governor Thomas A. Osborne offered a $2,000 reward for the apprehension of all four.
Okay.
The story goes that the detectives found wagon tracks that belonged to the Bender's wagon. The wagon was found abandoned with a team of starving horses just outside the city of Thayer, which was about 12 miles from the inn. When they got to Thayer, the Benders bought tickets on the Leavenworth, Lawrence, and Galveston Railroad toward Humboldt. At Chanute, John Bender and Kate left the train and got onto the MKNT train going south to Red River County near Denison, Texas.
Oh.
From there, they traveled to an outlaw colony thought to be in the border region between Texas and New Mexico. They were not pursued because it was known that lawmen following outlaws into that region never returned home.
Oh, wow.
So they're like, y'all just go.
It's surprising to me, like, even back then, how they knew stuff like that. Like, oh, this is an outlaw town and we're safe here.
Yeah.
Like, how did they know stuff like that?
I mean, how do you keep tabs on everything? Yeah. And especially with the population is not what it is now.
Exactly.
Yeah, so.
And news didn't travel the way it does.
Right. Now. It would be like 2 weeks before anybody would hear anything. And yeah, I think you just had to be really good at your job if you were a detective back then.
Yeah.
One detective later claimed that he had traced the pair to the border where he had found that John Jr. had died of apoplexy, which is basically a cerebral hemorrhage or stroke.
Okay.
Ma and Pa Bender did not leave the train at Humboldt, but instead continued north to Kansas City, where it was believed that they purchased tickets to St. Louis, Missouri. Several groups were formed to search for them, and there are several stories of people saying that they found them, and they insinuate that they killed them. Many stories say that one vigilante group actually caught the Benders and shot all of them except for Kate. They said that they didn't shoot her, they burned her alive. another group claimed that they had caught the Benders and lynched them before throwing their bodies into the Verdigris River. Another group claimed they killed the Benders during a gunfight and buried their bodies on the prairie. However, no one ever claimed the $3,000 reward for finding them.
Okay.
Which in today's money would be $75,000.
I guess they want the clout. Is that what it is?
Yeah. So, none of these stories have been proven. So, what I just told you, I don't know if it's true.
Forget everything I just said.
The search continued on and off for the next 50 years. Again, the Benders were believed to be from Germany. However, only John Sr. and John Jr. were born overseas, and they were not actually part of the Bender family. I don't know how they knew that. Pa Bender was from either Germany or Holland and was born with the name of John Flickinger. John Jr. was born with the name of John Gebhardt, that name that was in the Bible.
Oh, okay.
All this information, I think, was all put together from the Bible found in the cabin, the immigration paperwork, and census reports. Okay, Ma Bender was born with the name Almira Mayick.
Okay.
In the Adirondack Mountains. Say that five times fast. And was once married to George Griffith, with whom she had 12 children.
Ooh! That's going to leave a mark.
Mm. It was reported that she remarried several times, each time following the death of her previous husband from head injuries.
Oh, okay. I see where this is going.
Yeah. I didn't see anything reporting how many husbands died from head injuries, but that's how the story goes.
What happened to her children?
So, Kate's the only one that followed her.
Okay. Well, I mean, I see why. I mean, I don't see why even Kate would follow her.
Right. Well, it seemed like they were a lot alike, apparently. I don't know. Maybe the others didn't like them.
Yeah. They're like, y'all be murdering, so I'm just going to stay here.
So, Kate was reportedly the fifth child of Ma Bender, a.k.a. Almira, and was born as Eliza Griffith.
Okay.
Different groups of two women traveling together were accused of being Kate Bender and her mother Elvira. In 1884, it was reported that John Flickinger, possibly Pa Bender, had been arrested for the murder of a man who had been beaten in the head with a hammer.
Oh my gosh.
So,
at least change it up a bit.
Right, know? Right. So, he wasn't positively identified. Why? Because before he could be positively identified, he cut off his foot in an effort to escape the ankle cuffs, and he bled out and died.
What?
That's extreme.
I mean, wow. Okay.
So on October 31st, Halloween, 1889, it was reported that a Miss Almira Monroe and Miss Eliza Davis, I don't know where all these names are coming. It's very confusing.
I need like a sheet of paper to write this down.
But they had been arrested in Niles, Michigan, around the Detroit area, and that their identities had now been confirmed by two witnesses from a tintype photograph.
What is that?
So it's just like that type of cameras that they took with foil or whatever.
Okay.
But these two witnesses had this photograph, brought it to the authorities and said, oh, look, we have this as Ma Bender and Kate Bender. These are the people. They look alike.
Yeah.
So Miss Davis also signed an affidavit admitting that Miss Monroe was Ma Bender. And they were both extradited to Oswego, Kansas for trial. Trial was originally scheduled for February 1890, but then rescheduled to May. The county did not want to pay for room and board.
They should have put them in the same room with a sheet in the middle.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, so they just let the two women go.
What? No.
They let them go.
Stop.
They just released them.
All of that hullabaloo. Mm. All the rewards. And you finally get them and you're just like,
we don't want to pay for your meals. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was later said that those two women weren't confirmed as the Bender women. I guess that's easy to, you know, justify why you left them.
Maybe they were like, we're not really sure anyways.
They said that the person who confirmed their identity didn't even know the women. They were just going off that photograph that they had. So that was not enough evidence. So there are two headstones next to each other in a cemetery in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. The names on them are Joe J. Bender and Katie Bender.
Oh.
So the information found on these people in Colorado tell a different kind of life than the bloody Benders.
Right.
That, you know, they didn't seem to be serial killers. But the dates on the headstones, they did add up to the same ages.
How weird.
So, yeah, nobody's really sure if they are the same people.
Well, maybe they went on to live upstanding lives and nobody knew about the previous.
How can you just change from...
Well, Lena, I mean, just think about all of the serial killers that aren't caught until...
And they just stop doing it.
Stop doing it, and they... The Golden State Killer.
Yeah.
I mean, he just, you know, was living in a house, and people knew him, and...
Yes.
I'm not saying he was a great guy, but maybe they did a lot of good things to try and, you know, distract from getting caught. Or
maybe
associated.
Maybe the times they went to Sunday school helped them.
Maybe. Hallelujah.
So The bodies that were found at the Bender Inn were taken and given a proper burial. Mackenzie, York, and Loncourt were buried in Independence. None of the other bodies were claimed, and they were buried.
Oh, no.
I know.
But so what sad. About all the people that, like, I guess, died with their heads bashed in and their throats cut?
So
they were attributed to this?
Well, they family? Were. Yeah, they yeah. were
And then all the missing people, were they?
Yeah, all of the people that I listed were all buried at the Benders, okay. all killed by the Benders. So all the bodies that were not claimed were reburied at the base of a mound, which is a mile southeast of the Benders Orchard. It's called the Benders Mound.
That
and it's
sucks.
Still there today.
And yeah. they're there?
They're there.
They have to stay there. Why couldn't they at least take them off the property and bury them somewhere else?
I know. I thought that too.
They were murdered there.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
So during the search of the cabin, they found three hammers that had been used as murder weapons.
Oh my gosh.
These hammers were given to the Bender Museum in 1967 by the son of Leroy Dick, who was the Osage Township trustee at the time, and he's the one that headed the search at the Bender property, so he's the one that gathered those hammers.
Wow, there's a Bender Museum?
There is. Well, now it's the Cherryvale Museum.
Okay.
the Cherryvale didn't want a museum, the Bender's Museum, to be attached to them, so...
Right.
Anyway, now it's Cherryvale Museum, and there's all things Cherryvale history there. But
okay.
there is a room specifically for the Benders there. The hammers are displayed there. And yeah, so the Bender cabin was destroyed by souvenir hunters, like people going and like they even would take, I mean, they took everything, including the bricks that lined the cellar and the stones lining the well.
Wow. Jeez Louise.
A book, if you want to read more or look into this case more, you can read this book that came out in 2022 called Hell's Half Acre, The Untold Story of the Benders, a Serial Killer Family on the American Frontier. And it's by British author Susan, okay, I knew I was going to not say this right, Yonasis. Yeah.
Okay.
Susan Yonasis. So anyway, that was long. Thank you for sticking with us.
Hey, I liked it.
Yeah.
There was lots to listen to. I liked it. Do you want to do our thankfulness?
Yeah, let's. What are you thankful for?
I'm thankful for Chandler Bing.
Oh, and you know what's, it just tugs my heart because... There was a letter that he wrote a few years ago that said, I know when I die, I'm only going to be remembered as friends, friends, friends.
That to him may be a bad thing. But to me,
mm-hmm.
I think there's so much of his personality that came through that character.
Oh, yeah.
And every night when I go to sleep, I watch Friends. Like I have for years. I put the TV on Friends.
Yeah.
I set the timer and I go to sleep. And every day for years, like when I used to go to work and come home, I would turn on Friends. Like I've seen every episode probably 3,000 times each. And he is
Aww.
My favorite.
Yeah.
He always has been. And the thing is, we talk about addicts and drug addicts sometimes and people who are down on their luck and how they matter too. And how every day is a new opportunity to change their lives and
right.
Better themselves and how it just sucks sometimes. And he was on the upswing.
Yeah.
He was so low for so long and then he really turned things around for himself
mm-hmm.
and for this to happen. Wish he would have had the time to live that healthy, happy life, and
yeah.
he wanted a family, and it just is so sad. Like,
I know,
oh,
and he did do other great things outside of Friends,
yeah.
And that's what his point was, like, I've done all these other good things,
yeah.
like, why does it have to just be Friends? But I mean, his character really did help. I mean, I've seen so many posts about,
yeah.
you know, watching Friends really helped me through some hard times. Yeah. And so, it breaks my heart.
I hate it. When I saw that, I was like, man, this hurts. Like, celebrities die all the time, but when it's ingrained in your life, aww, like something, his work, right, and that's what it is. It's his work.
Yeah.
It's a body of his work that has been so important in my life. And so I'm thankful for Matthew Perry and, aww, what he has been in my life, even, yeah, though it may seem silly, you know,
yeah,
so much of my life spent, yeah, watching Friends.
I know.
Reruns and reruns. And it's still funny. Like, me and Daniel still laugh at Friends. Like, the same jokes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's still funny. Yeah. We laugh like it's the first time we've heard it. How is that? Anyways. So, yeah.
But it's so relatable, too. He was so relatable. So.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That's a good one, Candace.
Rest in peace, Guy.
Yeah.
What are you thankful for? Grains, beans, potatoes, tomatoes.
Exactly. How'd you know I was going to say that? I'm thankful for chapstick.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Love chapstick.
Yeah. My lips are always chapped, so I cling on to my chapstick. Mm-hmm. So,
especially in this weather. The weather has dropped here in Texas. And
yeah, I went from like 80 degrees to 30,
yeah,
in one day.
It's the wind chill is what it is.
Yeah.
It just takes your breath away. So that, keep that chapstick handy,
because, yeah,
you're going to need it.
Yep.
Well, guys, this was great. As Chandler Bing would say,
let's do it again sometime.
Let's do it again sometime. Aww. See you next week, guys.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Well, thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating so that other true crime fans can find us.
If you have any case suggestions or just want to say hey, email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram, where we post case photos and information at Cousins on Crime Podcast.